We'll be using the provider management database to facilitate provider retention, and it will be presented by Letty Cherry Krager. She is the VACTRAC Immunization Registry Manager for the Riverside County, in Riverside County, California. So, Letty.
Good afternoon, everyone. Are you all awake? Hope you will stay awake through this presentation. Okay, earlier I did speak about provider recruitment, and I'm moving on into provider retention. And this is more focusing on some of the technology we use with our provider retention. So, what I will talk about, though, our provider retention has a proactive customer service philosophy that is ingrained with it, so we do care calls and site reviews, and what makes this possible is the use of our provider management database that we designed a few years ago. I'll go over some statistics that show how care calls do make a difference, and then conclude the talk for the day. So with provider retention, we all know that a strong help desk is an essential part for provider retention. We promote it at trainings. We try to ingrain in the staff that we are training that it's there, it exists, how it can help them. We put the phone number everywhere. It's on training materials. It's on our incentives that we give out. It's on little business cards that we tack to the front of their computer screen so that they will know when to call us. But the question is a strong help desk alone enough to maintain provider retention? And it can be if all the users immediately call whenever they have a question or if they have a need for assistance. But they don't, because they're busy, they forget, they don't know who to call, they have complete staff turnover, and they don't even know they're part of the registry system, or most likely it's an excuse not to use. Therefore, proactive customer service is a necessary component of provider retention. A little bit of a historical perspective. We, during 2004, we received 312 phone calls from providers. Only 8 of those calls were about issues critical to maintaining compliance with registry use, such as adding new users, inactivating users, and training users. We started care calls in 2004 as well, and when we compared the numbers of care calls we made, we found 210 unreported compliance-related issues. So, how do we learn of these issues when providers don't call us? We call them. Care calls are a form of customer service, and they're used to make sure the customer, who is our providers, are happy with the service. We determine if there are any problems or needs, but we also use it to build a relationship which help retain the provider. We begin with the end in mind. We start care calls during implementation, and our provider retention also starts during the provider enrollment and implementation phase. We reinforce the role of the registry help desk and see how users are doing. And care calls are also the responsibility of everyone. Our help desk makes an introductory call 2 to 3 days after the training to make sure the user has logged in. The trainer calls 1 to 2 weeks after training, see how things are going. And then either the trainer or support staff make a 1-month follow-up call. Once we have fully implemented the provider with the registry, we schedule routine follow-up calls every 3 to 6 months. We do it about every 3 months if they're a new clinic or if they're struggling to use the registry and they aren't really good about consistently entering data, or we do it every 6 months if both the staff and the usage level is stable. We call the primary user contact. They're the ones that are going to be able to answer our questions most effectively. We use an outline. There is so much that we go over during these care calls. We do not want to forget anything on our care call list. So after we do the introduction, we address employee turnover. We need to see if there are any new employees we need to add or if there's anyone that we need to inactivate from the system. We check with them to see how they're doing their patient disclosure. We also talk to them about record lookup activity and data entry activity, find out if they need any materials or supplies. We reinforce the help desk, and then we end the call. And we have found that we need to do more than just have care calls. So we do site reviews as well. Our goal is to do a site review with a provider every 6 months. It is not always possible, so we do it at least once a year. We find that the face-to-face follow-up reveals more than what takes place on the phone. When you're on the phone, the phone is a lot safer for these providers, and you can ask them questions. Oh, yeah, I'm not having any problems. It's great. Actions speak louder than words. You ask them to put in a record, and they're like, how do I look up the patient? It's also another way to build relationships and to look for teachable moments. Because one of the things that we find is when we are asking someone to do a return demonstration, we will find that they may be making a common, simple mistake, and we can point that out to them. Our site review, we do review the registry implementation plan, such as disclosure, just like we do on a care call, the record lookup data entry, and then we do watch them enter the record. We also sometimes just show up and do something nice, deliver a provider appreciation gift, drop by with some small incentives, pens, just to say, hi, how's it going? Whenever I have staff turnover, that's what I encourage them to do, to go just introduce themselves, drop off some pens, see if they need any additional forms. And if the site visit does do a lot of having them go over the disclosure, the record lookup, it can replace the care call for that period of time. And now you may be sitting there saying, well, care calls, they're a nice idea. But I don't have the staff and I don't have the time to do it. Does that sound familiar? That's what a lot of our providers say, but I do have some good news about that. And before I share that, let me just say in Riverside County, we have just under 500 total enrolled providers that we're doing calls on, about most of them every 3 months. We have another 500 to 600 providers that we're calling anywhere from every 2 weeks to once a year. And you don't need to have a large staff, just an efficient, well-organized one. And the way we do it, and one of the things I didn't say, I was gonna ask you, how many staff do you think it takes to do all those care calls? I have consistently only 2 or 3 people that are doing all of that work. We developed the provider management database in 2002, and we use it as a tool for recruitment, retention, program evaluation, and it is also a very effective way for our staff to communicate about providers. If you were in the last talk that I did, I said that we have, our county's about 7,200 square miles. That means I have had staff based in different areas, anywhere from 2 to 3 different work locations. And what our provider management database allows us to do is we enter everything into it, and we can, the staff that are out in Indio, which is an hour and a half drive away, instantaneously see whatever the Riverside staff put into the database. So there are several components of our database that are used during care calls, and I will be going over these individually in just a moment. We have a site ID tab, training tab, expectations tab, activity tab, and the most critical one, the notes tab. Now, on our site ID tab, this is where we're going to verify the contact information. We verify the email, the address, the phone number. We make sure we have the correct user rep, the correct management rep, since that staff turnover can change as well. And I have circled the area in red where we verify at least once a year that we have the most current information. The training tab contains the list of all the users at the facility and their training dates, and we just quickly go through this list with our contact to make sure that the people who are listed there are still working at that site. Our expectation tab has a couple of bits of information. Part of it, it will contain some information about the practice size, about how many immunizations they give per day, which is helpful when we look at the next tab. But it also contains what the implementation plan for the site is, such as who's doing disclosure and how is it being done, when's it being done, who's doing the record lookup before patients come in or when patients show up, who's doing data entry, how and when are they doing that. And that allows us, we can just ask some questions to make sure that that is still occurring. The activity tab is where we track the activity to each site by user. And so when we ask, how's it going, and they say, oh, great, you haven't any problems entering data? No, and this says no, that there's no activity going on. We know that there's a problem and that we need to schedule a visit. And we do get this data from some register reports on that show the number of immunizations that are entered, both new and history, and also how much lookup the users are doing. The notes tab, as I said earlier, is the most critical part. This is every single thing about our provider contact is entered on the notes, whether it's a phone call, whether we've mailed them something, whether it's just a general follow-up note. And this is where we communicate with each other about our providers at all times. It is impossible for staff in Indio to go to the file in Riverside and pull the file out to see what's going on. That's why we have chosen to do this electronic software, and it's just an access file, and it's on our shared database that on our network that everyone can get into. And we also use it to track our non-enrolled sites so that it is also used as a marketing tool. The provider management database makes it easy for us to keep track of which providers need to be called, when they need to be called, and the notes tab is key to that call tracking. The information from the notes tab goes into our customer service report that will provide detailed information when those calls need to occur. And the way this works is when my staff have to make a call, they're entering their note into the database. They will put whatever follow-up they need to in the main section of the notes. Then in the circled area, they have an action due date that they put in. So they'll assign, like if they need to do a 3-month follow-up call, they'll put a date 3 months out. The call is assigned. If the trainer needs to assign it to a support staff, she'll check the OA box. Otherwise, it's blank if it's going to go back to the trainer. And then the previous call is closed, but we always have to leave a call open. And we do have a report built into the database to make sure, as a QA, to make sure that every now and then a provider gets a call closed by mistake, which happens more often when staff are new, and we can go through and check that so that we don't lose anyone to follow up. And then we print out this weekly call sheet. It can be printed out as often as 3 times a week. For our support staff, it is 3 times a week that we print it out, because I may put in an important follow-up or the trainer may put in an important follow-up that needs to occur during that week. And they'll make their notes. When they make the calls, they make their notes on it, then they update the database. And if they get a hold of the provider, the call drops off the next list. If they don't get a hold of the provider, then it stays on the list. And this just kind of gives you an idea on provider calls to VaxTrack on any kind of retention-related issues, which are the adding or inactivating users and training users. And between 2004 and 2007, you'll see we did not receive a lot of calls for this. But when we made the calls to providers, you see that we actually found a lot more. And a lot of it has to do with getting additional training. And this slide just gives kind of a comparison on the total number of calls. You see that providers, they called almost 2,600 times, but they only had 4,600 retention-related issues. And our calls, we made over 7,600 and found over 1,600 retention-related calls. So in summary, providers did make almost 2,600 calls to VaxTrack. Only basically 3% of those calls were issues related to their continued compliance and use of the registry. We made the additional 7,600 calls, and identified an additional 1654 compliance-related issues. And again, I only had on average 2 to 3 staff to make all of those calls. If providers only contact the registry staff 3% of the time when they need to add, inactivate, and or train users, then the registry staff must provide proactive customer service. And you don't need to have a large staff. You just need to use technology to make the impossible possible. And what we have done in the past, when we first introduced this, back when we had separate National Immunization Registry conferences, we presented the database at that time, and we did give out copies of the database to people who are interested. I don't have copies of them, but anyone who's interested in a copy of this database, it is totally free. Just come up and I'll tell you how we can go about getting you a copy of it, and you can tweak it to your heart's content, because I know that we have distributed, several states have received copies, and in California, several of the regional registries have received copies. Some of them are using it, and I do know a lot of them have tweaked it, and I've liked the tweaks that I've seen that they have done. So it's just there. Why reinvent the wheel if there's something to springboard off of? Thank you.
Oh, very good. And thank both of our presenters. Are there any questions at this time?
Hi, I have a question for Nancy. Are there any concerns in terms of data quality by you having non-medical personnel add immunizations into your registry? Are you concerned about that in terms of having, you know, school office staff and child care staff adding immunizations?
Well, first of all, I'll let you know that our school providers that are entering data, for example, San Diego Unified, the only people that add data are the nurses. Okay. And in our other providers, our school providers, it's always the nurse that's doing the data entry.
So in the schools and in the daycare Head Start?
We haven't had any child care users be historical entry, but they're thinking about doing data exchanges with us.
And what would happen during that? You would kind of review the data there's inputting?
Well, we do quality assurance with the registry, where we look at shots that are entered. So we have intermittent reports that come out throughout the year that let us know who the users are and if there are questions about the shots.
Okay, so just in the schools, the nurses do it, and child care, not yet?
Not yet.
Okay, thank you.
I have a follow-up question for Nancy on the same topic. So moving along then on the data entry by the schools, I know you're obviously talking about doses being entered, but do they enter in or update other information such as responsible party contact information? Is that a part of information that the schools update or touch?
No. For our registry, they don't enter any demographic information. All they enter are, for example, San Diego Unified. If they're changing the nature of the yellow card, they're going to be entering historical data in any shots they give.
Okay.
So they're not entering any other data.
Okay. And this is a question for Letty or Nancy. Can you speak to whether or not your registries are being used for recall purposes? You obviously speak to the use in terms of assessment, or actually in this case, being used by providers. Can you speak to the use for recall of the clients?
We do both. What we call both reminder and recall, we send out postcards for provider offices, and we do them to recall children back to the provider, but we also do postcards as a reminder to parents whose children are 12 months or younger who do not have shots in the registry. And our postcards, I have a poster downstairs on this. If they don't have their shots in the registry, then they can call our help desk and we refer them. If they don't have a doctor, we can refer them out to that. But we do use our registry for those purposes, and we're actually paying postage to do that.
Okay, great.
I'd like to say we're doing the same thing for the San Diego Immunization Registry for medical providers. But our registry manager, who's here today, actually is just working on a school roster for school providers where they can print out a list of children in their schools that may be missing shots.
Right. Okay, good. All right.
But
well, so that's more of a report format, but it's the same
right.
idea. All right, thank you.
Hi, this question is for Nancy. You mentioned or made the comment that school and child care providers, they're not just read-only users. Mm-hmm. So I was interested in your creative approach to FERPA.
FERPA? In what way?
How are they getting consent from the parents to enter that data, or is it they're entering it, but only certain users can view it? There's been many different approaches.
So just let me say, for those of you that don't know what FERPA is, it's the federal education law that is the HIPAA of the education world. And so for any exchange of information, there's got to be a signed consent by the parent. And let me just speak with you about what San Diego Unified has done with FERPA with our records. Basically, they have a form, and on the bottom of their form, they have language that states, I understand that my child's record may be used for immunization purposes to share with other medical providers such as physicians, public health centers, and such, and I consent to this. And so on that language, not only does it have to say, yes, I consent to share, but the parent has to sign that as well.
Great, thank you.
Hi, this question's for Letty. I'm very new to the immunization registry, so forgive me if I'm asking something that's, you mentioned that you send out the reminder recall notices for your providers. Do you feel that that's helped as a marketing tool to recruit providers? And my second question is, your proactive customer service staff, or staff that does your proactive mm-hmm. customer service, are they also the same staff that actually go out and recruit and train providers? Are you using same staff to do both?
I have one staff member that does provider recruitment, and then we have, through our immunization program, there's some nurse health educators that do the immunization assessments, and they do the CASA audits at a provider office. They will, when they're out there doing their education, they promote registry, and they may help train. But my staff doing the proactive customer service, one of them is mainly in the office. But the other one helps, she's in the office doing care calls, but she also helps with site reviews. So she does a bit about, but not the actual recruitment, but they will assist with training once the provider is enrolled. And then you had another, and on the reminder recall, yes, it is a selling point for providers because it's one less thing that they have to do. We provide them with a call list. So when we send the postcard out, we also have a call list that we send them so they know which of their patients receive a postcard so that they can also be proactive about calling. If the child does not come in for an appointment, they can be proactive about calling to get the child in.
Okay, great. Thank you.
I'm sorry, Letty, I do have a question for you. In sending out the reminder recalls, one, I'd be interested in knowing how large your provider base is, and also the completeness rate of your registry, so that when you do send them out, you know, how complete are the immunization records for the children?
I don't, off the top of my head, I don't have the completeness rate, but as far as providers, we have got almost 200 private medical providers, and then we also have a number of public health, family care centers, immunization outreach clinics, et cetera, that we send to. We have probably altogether, and just Riverside County, but I can give you just Riverside County numbers, but there's Riverside and San Bernardino County numbers. So I would say altogether, for the whole entire region, we have at least 1,000 that we're sending out. And we'll send out up to 3 postcards. So
I would just like to add something to that. In our registry, our providers print off lists so they can send their own reminder recalls. But we also have a report called the Provider Profile Report. in which a provider can download this once a month to see how they're doing. And this report tells them if there are any duplicate records in the system, if they have complete addresses, phone numbers, or bad addresses, bad phone numbers. And it lets them know how many reminder recalls they're sending out in any given month, and also if they're doing what we call timely data entry, and that is putting the record in within 30 days.